They don't care about American values.
The American people do not support a preemptive unilateral strike against Iraq. The idea that we would throw 350 years of international law to make the world a safer place, and we're about to undo all of that international law.
This is a guy who is freaky about his own personal security. He thinks there are people out to kill him, and maybe he's got some reason to believe that.
Next Monday, we're having a big anti-war protest here in central Illinois, and we are going to launch a national campaign to impeach Bush, Cheney, and Ashcroft.
This is a show about peace, preserving it, promoting it, and monitoring those who would seek to destroy it. I'm Verna Avery Brown. You're listening to Imperatives for Peace, Pacifica's Peace Watch. A House of Representatives International Relations Committee reviewed the language of the bipartisan compromise resolution today and to prepare it for a floor vote expected sometimes next week. Representatives from 24 states were not flanking President Bush yesterday when he delivered his Rose Garden speech announcing bipartisan support for a resolution giving him authority to send in American troops without a request from the UN. 23 Democrats and one independent opposed to the resolution held an afternoon press conference of their own today on the Hill, stating their reasons for voting no against invading Iraq.
My name is Sheila Jackson Lee, 18th Congressional District in Houston, Texas. And I believe that if you go home and if pierce the veil of unanimity on this question, you will find out that there is great opposition to this war. The presence of so many members is to express our opposition to the president's resolution and proposition to be given unilateral authority to do a preemptive strike against Iraq. It violates international law. It violates the comity of nations that allows us to keep peace and harmony in the world. It sets a precedent for our allies, such as China, such as India, and others, to express themselves as such. And it violates, again, the constitutional provision that we, the Congress, declares war. It is imperative that we have the opportunity, after the UN inspectors go in unfettered, to reassess the position of the United States as to whether or not it is appropriate for us to go into war.
God bless America. My name is Corrine Brown from Florida. I love America. And you know, this is almost as sad a day as 621 days ago when the Supreme Court selected George W. Bush to be our president. In the 10 years I've been elected, this is the hardest vote that we've had to take, this vote that they're asking us to take to give up our constitutional duties as members of the United States Congress and hand it the president a blank check. Well, I've heard many of my colleagues say over and over again that the president is the only person elected by all other people. Well, I must be missing something, because in the last election, it was a 5-4 decision. And in 621 days, we're on the brink of war. And I'm asking the public to weigh in on how they feel about it, whether or not they've been given adequate information that will cause us to attack another country. And if you feel as many of my constituents, please call 202-225-3121 and weigh in.
Yes. Jose Serrano of New York.
Jose Serrano from the Bronx, New York. I agree with my colleague Mike. The president hasn't made a case, and I, in addition, am very suspicious about how this came about. This whole idea of suggesting that anyone who opposes this is un-American or not a good patriot is totally improper. He hasn't made a case. This is too open-ended, and at this point and forever, we don't support this resolution and should not pass, and we should let other courses take. Thank you.
Danny Davis of Illinois.
I believe that we're being called upon to vote on a resolution that will result in war with Iraq. I don't believe that we have made the case that all possible means have been exhausted to avoid and avert a war. I believe that war will obviously be detrimental to stabilizing the Middle East region, and I am opposed to the resolution I am opposed to war at this moment and will vote against it.
Hildo Solis of California.
Yo les quiero hablar en español para la gente que habla español. Yo les quiero decir que por favor contactan sus representantes aquí en el Congreso porque ellos no tienen la idea de nuestra comunidad. Yo sé que en mi distrito en Los Ángeles mucha gente me ha llamado y me dicen que no están de acuerdo con la posición del presidente, que quieren paz y yo les pido que por favor hablen sus representantes durante este tiempo. El número es 202-225-3121. In English, I would just like to say that in my own district in Los Angeles, California, the calls that I have gotten, 98% of them are not in favor of going to war. Let us strive for some kind of plan that will bring the UN together in there to do the inspections and then make a decision if there are nuclear armaments there. But at this point, I don't believe we have enough evidence to move forward in that fashion.
Giving the president authority to wage a unilateral war, a preemptive war against Iraq, would be a terrible mistake. This idea is opposed not only by the Catholic Church and the Vatican, not only opposed vigorously by Nelson Mandela, not only opposed by the vast majority of countries in the world, but it is opposed by an overwhelming number of American citizens who say that the United States and the president must work with the international community and must work with the United Nations to allow international weapons inspectors to go into Iraq to make sure that Saddam Hussein does not have weapons of mass destruction. There are many reasons to oppose this resolution, but one that doesn't get enough attention is that with a $6 trillion national debt and a growing deficit, with cuts in Medicare, at a time when veterans can't even get treatment in a VA hospital, this operation in Iraq could cost the American taxpayers hundreds of billions of dollars, and I think that that is unnecessary.
Independent Bernie Sanders. Rhode Island Representative Jim Leach, a Republican, was not at today's press conference, but has come out against the resolution, saying he supports regime change in Iraq, but says now is not the time to wage war against the Iraqi people. The entire Congressional Black Caucus voted as a whole in opposition to attacking Iraq. White House spokesperson Ari Fleischer issued a comment earlier this week that was heard around the world when he said a bullet is a cheaper way to deal with Saddam Hussein than a war. Robert Knight of Pacifica Station WBAI in New York has been following the fallout from this statement. Robert?
Well, Verna, there is quite a bit of recoil in that Fleischer magic bullet, which he implied should be used on Saddam Hussein to effect the Bush administration's so-called regime change. That recoil comes in two forms. Diplomatically, since national leaders all over the world might now no longer feel safe in dealing with a potentially homicidal United States administration. But there's also legal recoil because the suggestion is an apparent violation of Executive Order 12333, which states, quote, "No person employed by or acting on behalf of the United States government shall engage in or conspire to engage in assassination," end quote. That, as well as the United Nations Charter that says that in peacetime, citizens of a nation, whether they are political officials or private individuals, should be immune from intentional acts of violence by citizens, agents, or military forces of another nation. Now, here's a compilation of what was actually said by Ari Fleischer and the stunned reaction of the White House press corps.
The president has not made any decisions about military action or what military option he might pursue. And so I think it's impossible to speculate. I can only say that the cost of a one-way ticket is substantially less than that. The cost of one bullet, if the Iraqi people take it on themselves, is substantially less than that. The cost of war is more than that. But there are many options that the president hopes the world and people of Iraq will exercise themselves of that gets rid of the threat. But it's impossible to say what the president's options are militarily from a price tag because he's made no decisions.
Is the White House advocating assassination as a possible option for Saddam Hussein?
I think that it's fair to say that the Iraqi regime is not satisfied with Saddam Hussein, that Saddam Hussein has created a great many enemies inside Iraq.
The White House like to see Saddam Hussein dead?
The policy is regime change, and that remains the American position.
Is there hope that he ends up dead in all this?
Regime change is the policy in whatever form it takes.
Can I just clarify the one bullet line that you have? Is the White House from this podium advocating the assassination of Saddam Hussein by his own people, by his military?
Well, the question was about potential costs and different scenarios for cost. And I just cited the fact that Saddam Hussein has survived as a result of the repression and suppression of his own people.
But I'm not asking you a question about costs. I'm asking you if you intend to advocate from that podium that some Iraqi's, you know, person put a bullet in his head.
Regime change is welcome in whatever form that it takes.
So the answer is yes.
Thank you. Regime change is welcome in whatever form it takes.
White House spokesperson Ari Fleischer, his wishful bullet also has legislative reverberations among members of Congress like Georgia Representative Cynthia McKinney, who in an interview with WBAI's Wake Up Call with Bernard White and Amy Goodman could not even believe that he said it when she was first apprised.
I can't believe that Ari would say something like that. If that's an accurate report, that's truly sad. We should be trying to find ways to make peace. And in fact, it's my understanding that our Secretary of State has said that he does not want the inspectors to get into Iraq. I can't understand that as well. If the objective is to disarm the despot, then UN inspectors are a very good way to do that. The last time the inspectors were there, they were doing a great job, were it not for interference from some government trying to use them as front for spying. It's ironic, given the way in which this administration came to office, that they would be suggesting regime change. The regime change ought to happen in Washington, D.C., so that the person, the rightful person who got 500,000 more votes than this particular regime ought to occupy the White House and occupy power in Washington, D.C. Let's talk about regime change, but let's start right here at home.
Representative Cynthia McKinney. Also on Wake Up Call, Bronx Representative Jose Serrano said that Fleischer's comments brought him a familiar shock.
It surprised me, but it didn't surprise me in the sense that there is surrounding this very serious issue a sort of a macho attitude that I keep coming back to, one that says that we are going to do it our way and anything is in play. And I think that, especially in the world we're living in today, to open the door for assassinations puts our leaders, puts our Congress, puts our Senate, our White House leaders in danger, because we're the country that is supposed to be telling the world to set some tone, some behavior. Now, for instance, when the president said that we had changed our long strategy of sort of responding to attacks rather than preemptive attacks, how the heck do you then go to other countries that are ready to do each other in and say, don't do that? I mean, India and Pakistan, we expended so much energy to try to stop them from doing a number on each other, and now we're basically saying, well, follow our lead, but don't follow our lead. You can't do what we're doing. So this is very bizarre, so much of what's going on.
So, Verna, what is bizarre is the bewildering tactical reversals we're seeing from the Bush administration this week. They're trying to render inoperative the statement made by Ari Fleischer, and Secretary of State General Powell is now saying that if there are inspections and disarmament, that, as he told the USA Today editorial board, quote, then, in effect, you have a different kind of regime, no matter who's in Baghdad, end quote, saying that regime change is not necessarily necessary. And across the puddle, British Prime Minister and Bush enabler Tony Blair said, furthermore, that so long as unconventional weapons are declared in Iraq, there would be no problem with the continuing production and use of conventional weapons. So the Bush administration this week has run away from the inspections that it wanted, and now it seems to be running away from the war powers that it won just yesterday from Congress. They say you should be careful of what you wish for because you might get it, but that's obviously not a problem for the Bush administration, which seems not to know what it actually wants in Iraq, except for the oil, of course. I'm Robert Knight in New York.
Thank you, Robert Knight, from Pacifica Station WBAI. An agreement reached Monday between UN officials and Saddam Hussein allows a new UN inspections team to re-enter the country to search for any signs that Saddam may be secretly manufacturing chemical biological weapons of mass destruction. Francis Boyle is a professor of international law at the University of Illinois College of Law. We asked Boyle what the UN resolution actually says about the use of force.
There is no authorization right now for any UN member to use military force against Iraq for any reason. And despite that, the Bush administration is engaging in a large-scale bombing campaign right now as we speak, even as of today, of Iraq in preparation for an invasion of Iraq under the pretext of the so-called no-fly zones that are clearly illegal under the terms of the United Nations Charter. Indeed, it's pathetic that the other day Secretary of Defense Rumsfeld tried to blame Iraq simply for defending itself and its people from illegal airstrikes by the United States government.
Well, it's a not very often stated fact that the U.S. has been bombing Iraq for some weeks and months now, years. So you're saying that even in recent days, perhaps since yesterday, that they've stepped up that bombing campaign?
Rumsfeld admitted publicly, I believe last week, that several months ago he had indeed stepped up the bombing campaign in preparation for an invasion of Iraq. So what we are seeing now is an abandonment of even the pretext that they're involved in actions of self-defense. That's correct. And by the way, this really needlessly jeopardizes the lives of U.S. pilots over there. It's basically using them as bait, literally begging Iraq to shoot down one of those airplanes and give Bush Jr. an immediate pretext for war.
It, however, appears that as a result of the House resolution that was agreed upon yesterday, hasn't been voted upon yet, but the new language that, the bipartisan language that gives President Bush the authority to use force, puts the U.S. House of Representatives, at least, on a dramatically different course than the path that the United Nations wants to go down. What kind of reaction has there been in Vienna to this latest development?
Well, I think it's a retrograde development myself that apparently the House of Representatives has caved in to the pressure applied by the Bush administration to go along with this. It's not quite clear what the United States Senate will do with this next week. There will be a debate. But in the meantime, of course, President Bush is attempting to bribe, threaten, and intimidate the members of the UN Security Council to get a resolution that would authorize the use of military force against Iraq. This is exactly what his father did back in the fall of 1990 in the run-up to the Gulf War in 1991. Security Council members were bribed, threatened, and intimidated to give him authorization to go to war. I do not know if Bush Jr. will succeed this time. But the problem is all the members of the Security Council have a price. I guess it's really going to be a question whether Bush Jr. is prepared to pay it.
So the key members of that Security Council are France, Russia, and China. Do they appear to be holding the line at this point, at least?
It's not clear at all. Russia apparently is angling for a better deal from Bush Jr., which would include a guarantee on its billions of dollars of debts to Iraq, access to Iraqi oil after the war, and probably accession to the World Trade Organization. China will have a price, too, perhaps scaling down the support of military, economic, political, and diplomatic that the Bush Jr. administration has been giving to Taiwan. France so far seems to be holding firm.
Are there any other key factors or that are sort of folded into this equation that we should be cognizant of at this time?
Everyone has to understand that the resolution approved yesterday by the House leadership will, despite whatever they're saying, basically give Bush Jr. a blank check to wage war against Iraq, a massive war, and we will move in, try to occupy Iraq, take Baghdad. We'll be killing hundreds of thousands of people. There will be substantial casualties on the part of U.S. armed forces, and we will not be leaving Iraq. The purpose of this invasion will be to seize and occupy the oil fields of Iraq, 10% of the world's oil resources, and to stay.
Professor Boyle, you make it sound like it's just a matter of time before it all begins.
No, it isn't. It's really up to the American people here to weigh in. I think we have to let our members of Congress and the Bush administration understand that we don't want a war. And as a correlative of that, we don't want a police state here at home, which Ashcroft has been busy constructing since the last war against Afghanistan. Next Monday, we're having a big anti-war protest here in central Illinois, and we are going to launch a national campaign to impeach Bush, Cheney, and Ashcroft in order to head this war off and stop the further consolidation of a police state here in the United States of America. We would all ask all Americans of good faith, goodwill, Democrats, Republicans, Greens, Libertarians, Independents, who don't want to see this catastrophic war, who do not want to see the United States occupying Iraq for the next generation when their grandchildren are born, and who do not want to see the further consolidation of a police state in America to join us.
Francis Boyle is a professor of international law at the University of Illinois College of Law. Iraqi President Saddam Hussein has drawn the line at allowing UN weapons inspectors into the presidential palaces. Analysts fear this may be a deal breaker in a sense, given the sensitivity of Saddam around his palaces. Milton Viorst is a reporter for The New Yorker who just returned from Baghdad last week. He says there's considerable history to take into account around Saddam's palaces.
Well, I think you have to go a little bit back into the history to understand what this is all about. And that is from 1991 when the weapons inspections began, right up through 1997. They ran rather harmoniously. I mean, let's not overdo this because the Iraqis didn't exactly like all those inspectors stomping around their turf. But for the most part, with a little surliness, but they did it. They did what the inspectors wanted. Well, in 1997... there was a change in the leadership of the weapons inspection teams that went out, and suddenly, at least as the Iraqis see it, they shifted away from targeting weapons to targeting political positions, and they asked, they demanded, would be more appropriate, they demanded to see presidential palaces, party headquarters, ministries, that sort of thing, which, you know, at best contained a lot of papers, and that's what they said they were looking for, to, you know, in records on this and that and the other thing, but didn't contain any weapons that anybody knew about. And that's where the problem really began.
So we're not really talking about two or three presidential palaces, are we? I mean, it's my understanding that Saddam Hussein has at least 50 of these huge, ornate, luxurious structures across the country.
I never heard the number 50, but I certainly, we're talking about more than two or three. I think I've heard about eight or nine compounds, and they're more than just palaces, they're compounds. And so there is, you know, conceivably some space in there to make mischief, but you also have to realize that this is a very proud, maybe arrogant nationalist regime which objects very strenuously to the whole question of violations of its sovereignty. But having made the concession on weapons, they now think that the weapons inspectors may be involved in security and political matters. And I think it's also important to note that there is some background for them to believe that.
So the Bush administration is clearly downplaying this whole business about the spying scandal.
Downplaying? I haven't seen a word about it. I mean, there has been and the press hasn't really gone back and reexamined this situation within the context. I mean, there was a certain amount of attention given to it in the press. The Washington Post, the Boston Globe, the New York Times all wrote major stories in early 1998, and they also talked about the fact that American planes bombed some of those sites, presumably based upon some of that espionage, but they have not re-examined. I have not seen a single story in which this has been re-examined within the context of President Bush's current objectives.
I'm surprised Saddam Hussein hasn't raised that issue again as a reason to limit
or restrict
access.
He has raised it. I mean, he raises it all the time, but we haven't really paid a lot of attention to it at all.
Okay. Thank you very much, Milton Viorst. Any final thoughts on your part?
Well, you know, the final thought on this part is that this is a far more complex situation. One doesn't have to find anything favorable to say about Saddam Hussein to acknowledge that this is a much more complex situation than the president has been conveying to the American people. He's been telling us part of the story. He's been giving us a lot of rumors. He's been giving us a lot of surmises, all of which are legitimate because there is no doubt that the weapons inspections should be resumed and resumed in a substantial and well-organized way. But there are other concerns having to do with American objectives and American behavior, particularly our admitted use of infiltrating the United Nations inspection teams for our personal espionage objectives. And I think we're not hearing that, and we should know a little bit more about it.
New Yorker reporter Milton Viorst, you're listening to Pacifica's Peace Watch. I'm Verna Avery Brown. We'll be back in a minute. Başları karanlık gördüm, havlarda sınavım gördüm.